Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
On the Sporting Couch with Gary Bloom.
Welcome to On the Sporting Couch, a programme about good mental health in sport. I'm Gary Bloom, a sports psychotherapist, and that means I work with all sorts of people, but often sportsmen and women, who are struggling or who have struggled in their day-to-day lives with issues like depression, anxiety, addictive behaviours, performance issues, and end-of-career problems. I'm doing this project to widen the understanding of mental health issues in sport and beyond, and give a taste of what goes on between therapist, me, and the person today who's on the sporting couch. Meet one of the most loved footballers ever to play in Britain.
Stylian Petra for 3-1. That's the goal which ensures the Scottish Cup is going to be in Celtic hands.
Villa sensing the possibility of a win. It's Petra! 2-1 Aston Villa!
Stylian Petrov played more than 200 times for Celtic and another 185 games for Aston Villa in a career that spanned just over 10 years, and he played more than 100 games for Bulgaria, captaining the national side. But in 2012, he had the toughest fight of his life when he was diagnosed with acute leukaemia. Later in the year, Stylian announced he was in remission and has worked tirelessly to raise money for cancer charities and raise awareness for the illness. He's still in remission and is now studying for a master's degree with UEFA. Once upon a time, I'll tell you a story about me. I was sent to Barcelona to do some interviews, and I was standing on the pitch interviewing Ronald Koeman, and a ball fizzed past my head and knocked the camera over where we were interviewing. And who had kicked the football was another Bulgarian player who played for Barcelona.
Mr. Stoichkov. Okay.
And I thought to myself, why would he do something like that? And I know you've had your battles with Christo.
We had our differences. Maybe it was a little bit more naive from me. We had our differences in a national team.
Did you like him?
I loved him. I still love him. He's still my idol. He've achieved so much for Bulgarian football. He achieved so much as an individual. He was a very difficult character, I'll put it that way. But sometimes we need to understand that people grow up and act differently. You just can't change people. I haven't agreed with a couple of things. I remember when he was the manager, I've retired because of certain things. You know, I've walked out, I've retired. I've said a couple of things. Then I realised, you know what? I'm making a mistake here.
So you apologised to Christos?
I apologize. And you know what? His words was, you know what? I've been there. I know how difficult it is. You're a young boy. You can work on my team tomorrow because you've got the honour and the courage to come and say sorry, which not many people can do that. And that was our conversation. And I was picked straight in the next game.
And there's the honesty.
Yes. And I suffer from dishonesty because then the press one on my back, and it wasn't about the football anymore. It's about the mental strength to turn people around again in my favour, because people love me there. I always give everything for my national team. I always talked about how you need to play, you know, the mental strength, the love about playing for your national team. And then all of a sudden I retired, I come back. So a lot of mixed views about it. And I had more mental. I need to be stronger mentally than actually to show what kind of footballer I am. then I've become, from showing my quality in the pitch, then I needed to fight in my head to show everyone how strong I am, that I can avoid, you know, all the press started criticizing me. I wasn't playing very well for a national team. And it's not just the performance, but the mental tiredness for me. It was a big issue. And, you know, saying that, my wife still blamed that, you know, because of that.
Blamed
me that, you know, I went back and, you know, I've played for a national team and I'm under a lot of stress.
Let me get this right. Your wife is saying that...
We're talking about the mental strength.
The mental strength. Yeah. This is what this program's about. Yeah. What you're saying is your wife said to you that by going back to play for the Bulgarian national football team, you brought onto yourself and...
Pressure.
The pressure and her, because obviously she's married to
you.
And I'm wondering what she's saying by saying you brought stress back into your life. Was she also saying the possibility of illness into your life?
I was diagnosed with leukemia just a couple months before I got back from the national team. We had a match, you know, we had a national team. And I remember that I wasn't speaking with the press for many months. And I won't mention the name of the coach, but I was told that if I don't speak, that's how football goes. And you need to decide mentally what you need to do. I was told that, you know, if you don't speak with the press, we'll take the captaincy off you.
So you were told by the Bulgarian coach...
Yes, at that time I didn't speak. I got back from the national team and I didn't speak with the press for literally probably 1.5 years.
Why didn't you speak to the press?
Because, I'll tell you why. A lot of people say, why did you do it? And I say, well, I'll do it because when I got back from the national team, they were really heavy on me. It was a lot of bad story, about stuff, about the family, about me, you know, quitting and going back and not being strong mentally enough to be strong. And I said to them, you know what? At that time, I wasn't playing for Aston Villa as well. So I said, I will stop talking to them and I'll show them that I can play and I'll get their trust back by playing football, not by talking on the press. And, you know, I was made to go on the press that time and... When I go back from the national team, my wife said, you look really exhausted. You look really tired. Are you okay? Because I had a really difficult week. I was put at the end of it. They told me that we'll take the captaincy. I need to make a decision. If not, you know, you need to make a decision. And I, you know, my head was all over the place. And, you know, we're talking about mental strength, ability to control yourself, ability to make a decision under a big stress level about, you know, you're fighting for your life to become somebody.
It's a really tough question, and I'm going to apologise for asking.
No, friend. Of course.
Do you think football made you ill and gave you the disease that you have fought so hard to bring attention to?
Wife blame it. I'll put it that way.
Well, your wife says yes.
Yeah.
I'm more interested what Stan says.
Give me an answer. I'll say so. And I'll tell you why, because when I... linking to what we do today and having my foundation and helping hospital researchers, speaking with a lot of doctors, everything is about the immune system. My leukemia is acute lymphoblastic leukemia and is an immune system. And they say usually your cells can turn sometime, obviously you may have a gene, but they can turn when your immune system is under stress and low. And what I had, a lot of traveling, a lot of games, a lot of stress. So all these have put together. You know, I've lowered my immune system. I remember when I was diagnosed, my hemoglobin, that's the strength of the blood, yeah? I was about 11 and a half, which is very low. For a footballer, we should be about 13, 14. So you've seen that I've actually, my immune system has lowered and I had the cancer in the blood.
Do you blame anybody else except yourself?
I'll blame myself. I've kept everything in. I do blame myself.
You don't blame anybody inside the Bulgarian FA?
I never blame anyone. I think we make our own path. We make our own decisions. And that's why people say, as the brain is so powerful, you need to make a decision. You need to do it in a split of a second. And sometimes we say words and we feel sorry for it. But I've kept everything in. In football, I always respect people. I always thought that I need to be nice to people. I need to treat them right. I probably could have said a lot of stuff that I've kept in. I was hurt a lot, but I never really say it. I was that kind of person. And if I need to go back again, that'll be the only things that I'll change. I'll actually express myself better and I won't keep things in.
Let's go back to the very start of your life, growing up in Bulgaria. Alyosha, your dad has a major impact on you growing up in your early life.
Yes, a major impact of making me realise what I really want. He said to me once that if you want to play football, you need to put the work in. It needs to be a very, very hard work. And he made it clear for me from the start that it's not just about the talent. You need to be a character. You need to be stronger than everyone. Because sometimes he said to me, he saw that other kids were better than me, but then you make me work and work and work to practice everything for me to get better.
Whose agenda was this, his or yours?
It was his intention, was my desire, because I wanted to become a footballer. I wanted to be somebody. I wanted to make sure that, you know, we're talking about Stoichkov, we're talking about Balakov, Lechkov. This is the, we had a great generation to look up to. They've become fourth in the world in 94 in USA. The country was all over the street. And we wanted to be like them. I wanted to be like them. I wanted to achieve, but I knew it would take a hell of a lot of work because I need to work. You know, sometimes these days, young kids think, oh, I've done my work in training and I'll just go back and I'll play a PlayStation. I'll be on the social media. And I used to become a footballer by doing my work, extra work, outside training.
I'm going to go a bit deeper. Your dad's an ex-pro, played professional football. Did you want it badly? Did you have the desire because you wanted to please him?
I didn't want to please him. I wanted to actually be better than him.
Was that it?
Because when I was growing up, everybody was talking about, my dad was playing midfielder. He was a left footer. He was incredibly technical. But like his dad used to say to me, your dad could have achieved a lot of things if he wasn't lazy enough.
Was he living his life perhaps through you and saying, look, I messed up. I didn't want it badly enough. But he has two boys, Ivan and yourself. Ivan, you said, was a better footballer than you.
He was better talent.
But he didn't have the desire, I'm guessing.
No, he didn't have the desire. He wasn't willing to sacrifice, because to become something, you need to sacrifice.
I'm asking you, did your dad, through you, try and rectify the mistakes he might have made as a younger man?
Probably, because he saw that what I was. Everybody was talking about early stage that I was something special. I was always playing with the older boys. They always saw something in me. And I think he saw that he never made it in a national team. He never made it abroad. He just couldn't get to that next level that he saw me opportunity. You know what? He can do it. Probably that was his dream. And he saw in me and he pushed me as hard as he can.
When you left Bulgaria, age 19, to go to Celtic, were there some feelings of homesickness? Did you miss mum and dad?
No, because I already moved from my local town, Montana. I've moved to CSK Sofia. So I was 17 when I moved away from home. I was in Sofia for 2 years already. I was living with Martin Petrov, after he ended up playing for Wolfsburg, Atletico Madrid, you know, Man City. So we lived together. For two years. Don't forget that I went in army as well, which that was needed to be mentally very strong. Bear in mind, you know, they were talking about me and Martin being one of the biggest talents in the world in Bulgaria. You know, to be the next big thing, and all of a sudden, you need to go in army and just forget about football.
Subscribe to this podcast on your podcast app and never miss an episode.
This is On the Sporting Couch, a programme about good mental health in sport. I'm Gary Bloom, a psychotherapist, and with me in the studio is former Aston Villa and Celtic player Stylian Petrov. What did the army do to you as an individual?
Give me a great discipline. I really understood what the friendship really means and how you need to fight for a friendship.
Did you think it gave you certain values that you've kept all your life?
Still? Yes, I already had values that I've developed, you know, the respect that to appreciate. But when you're in the army and when you live with 120 boys, I really understood how important is the teamwork, to understand people, to actually work with people, because we had so many kids. We have different sports people. We had wrestlers. We've got volleyball players. We had footballers. So it's different characters. So to adjust to their way of thinking was completely different. And I think that gave me the strength to really understand the teamwork.
So a huge cultural change when at 19 you leave home and you arrive in Scotland to play for Celtic. You don't speak any English. That must have been a huge, huge learning curve for you.
It was. I wanted to become somebody in football. I had this opportunity. And when you have opportunity like that, we always fear what's going to happen, what's going to be the end of it. I went without a fear to actually what I'm going to achieve. If I stay in Bulgaria, I would have been comfortable. I was in a national team. Mentally, I was in a good place. I was playing in one of the biggest clubs in Bulgaria. Press was adoring me. They thought that I was going to be the next biggest thing. I could have stayed there. Maybe I could never develop the way I've developed when I moved. By going to Celtic, I've experienced something different. Different culture, better players, quicker football. Everything was completely different. And all of a sudden, from being so comfortable to being, you know, the biggest star in Bulgaria, I'm going to be nobody. I need to start from scratch, thinking about I need to show everybody what I can do, how good I am, how strong I am mentally. But it didn't start well for me. It was a nightmare for me.
What happened?
Obviously, when I went there, I was overweight. I didn't speak the language. They were playing me in the right back position, which I've never played. The team wasn't doing very well, so that didn't really work for me. Then John Barnes left, then Kenny Dalglish left, and I had Martin O'Neill as a manager. So I remember when Martin O'Neill came, and you see a new manager, you're happy. But I remember going back to a preseason with about 8 kilos overweight, unacceptable. But that was the way I was in Bulgaria. You go in a preseason and, you know, you work for 6 weeks, you lose it and you fit for the season. But in Scotland, in England, they don't accept that. You need to be fit for the first day. And for me, that mentality, it wasn't there. I wasn't thinking that way. So we've done a blip test. And Martin O'Neill actually asked one of the doctors, he said, is that one of the physios that actually tried to get fit with the boys? And
what an insult.
It is an insult, but I've brought that to me. But see now, the mental thing is, Martin O'Neill didn't say it straight to me. He asked the doctor, and the doctor told him, you know, he's a good boy. Apparently, he's a good talent. You know, you should give him a chance. So the first week we trained, obviously I've trained well, but you can see my mobility wasn't the best. Mm. So Martin O'Neill pulled me, mental thing, and he said to me, first of all, I'd like to say that I like what you're offering at the moment. I think you're very unfit, and I'll give you 6 weeks. You have 6 weeks to prove me that I'm wrong and to prove me that I can give you a new contract, because I think this contract you've signed is not good enough for what everybody's saying, how good you are. For 6 weeks, I need to mentally be strong and eat only greens. I'm talking about vegetable salad, so I can go down to the weight that they want me. But a week before the 6 weeks, before we start the season, I've lost everything, and I was actually 2 kilos under what they want me to. I've played a couple of friendly games. He was satisfied, he saw it, and he pulled me in. I always talk about the man, and he was one of the best man-to-man management, talking with people and encourage people. So he pulled me in. He had the offer already written in a contract. He said, I'm increasing your contract. You showed great desire. So great mental strength. I was watching you every day, what you eat, how much work you've done. You've stayed behind everyone. And you know what? I need players like that. Since he said that to me, I've never looked back. And every day he wants, everything he asked me to do, I've done it for him because he trusts me and he showed me in his head, he knows how good I am and what I can do.
In that period when you're proving yourself, was it stressful?
It was stressful.
Because we've come back to the topic of stress again, Stillian, don't we? Ultimately, you paid a huge price for the amount of stress that you put yourself under over a long period of time, Stillian.
Yes, and a lot of people talking about it, a lot of people talking about the stress level in sport, exhausted of the player, too many games, how fit the players can get, you know, heart attacks, mental strength, people struggling after, you know, football. I think I've got a lot of friends that are struggling because the intensity, the pressure. And when you're into that pressure, the adrenaline kick in, you miss that when you finish football. And a lot of people, a lot of struggle, and a lot of ex-footballers, a lot of sports people are struggling to deal with that kind of mental adjustment.
I'm going to throw another element of stress into the conversation, something that you were very open with me when we spoke on the telephone the other day. And you talked about the financial pressures that were on you and the insecurities that were on you in your early days as a professional footballer in Britain.
My first contract wasn't the best. First of all, it was about £300 a week. I was moved to a five-bedroom house. Don't remember, I was only 19 years old. I've never lived in a house like that. I'm in a different environment. I need to pay extra rent. I need to pay tax on a council tax. I need to pay my bills. I haven't opened my letters for about 3 months. So you can imagine the staggering bills for that period of time was quite huge. I didn't know when I need to pay my council tax. The bank that have Celtic opened an account, they've sent me a credit card. I didn't know the pins. I didn't know how to use it.
Who
I could have asked?
Who was your friend at Celtic? Did you have a friend at Celtic who you could say to, look, I don't understand this. Can you help me?
I would blame my agent. At that time, this is the time when the agents come around. Agents signed the deal. If send me on the flight on my own, I've landed in Glasgow first day. It was about six guys from the club waiting for me. It was about 20 journalists. They're waiting for me to say a word. I didn't have anyone.
Who did you turn to in the end, Stillian?
At the end, it was a guy who worked as a security at Celtic Park. It's called Brian Wilson. Obviously, one game he saw that I was hurt and I couldn't explain to the physio what happened to me. I come out of the game and he say, can I give you a lift? So he offered the lift. I spoke with, I didn't speak. He said that he'll give me a lift. So he gave me a lift and we started to have a little chat. Somebody who I didn't know, if not is how much I've struggled, and he offered his help. And we've become the best friends. He's become I call him Scottish father because he looked after me. When he came to the house on the next day, when he brought me out of the training, he saw the pile of letters that big. So he tapped me on the shoulder and he say, obviously I knew that he wanted to look. I say, yes. So he started looking at him. He could see red, 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 red. When he starts saying red, 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 obviously I know what he's now about. So he spoke with somebody at the club. At that time, the club said, okay, we're going to get interpreter for you because they saw I'm struggling massively. So they had a young boy from Edinburgh University to come and help me a little bit. They moved me to a smaller flat that I could actually afford. That was on my contract. They can pay the rent, so I don't need to pay extra. Brian then started calling Orange City Council, different electricity bill, everybody, so we can start working a payment plan. But for me at that time, I needed to perform, but I couldn't because my head is now, I can't deal with that. What I've done, what kind of contract I've signed. I all of a sudden, like you say, my naivety, I was very naive. Obviously, I find a very difficult situation. Instead of me dealing in a pitch physically, what I can do best, now I'm mentally not ready to perform or be able to perform because of everything, all the issues outside football.
Actually, what's coming out in our conversation is your ill-preparedness to take the steps that in some respects you're desperate to take, but you're not quite mentally ready, and you, there seems to be a lag to me that you have to try and catch up. Your career at that stage is all about catching up. Would you agree with me?
Yeah, of course.
And that causes enormous stress on you.
Enormous stress. But what I'll blame for you, you know, going to schools these days, they teach you about everything, but they actually don't teach you what your life is all about. But actually, the real problems in life, I couldn't deal with it.
Let's fast forward. You have a very successful career at Celtic. Martin O'Neill goes to Aston Villa, takes you with him to Aston Villa. You have 6 years at Villa in a successful team. And then in 2012, disaster, personal disaster strikes you. Can you just talk us through the emotional landscape of learning that you've got acute leukemia?
Well, I had a little cold that week, and I didn't find out, really. I didn't put it through my head that actually I've got cancer. I've got leukemia, that everything I need to deal with. It was just one as a normal person, you know, you've got a little cold, and you, as a footballer, you run it off, you sweat it out, and you're ready. But the problem for me was at the Arsenal game. You know that sometimes you've got bad times, you've got tiredness, but you go through it. But this is was different kind of tiredness. My tiredness was in the brain. I couldn't do anything. It's all of a sudden, I wanted to do stuff. My legs wanted to go. My brain didn't want to go. So I knew something's wrong. I knew that something wasn't right.
So your body wants to play. Your body wants to fight. But somewhere in your unconscious, as we call it, something is saying, sorry, mate, we're out of here.
We're out of it, and something's happening. And then we had our heart checked because the previous week is what happened with Fabrice Muamba on the pitch. So the doctor say, let's just do a checkup on your heart, a blood test. And from the blood test for the next 2 days, the doctor kept telling me everything is all right. We need to do another blood test. And then I remember that week on Thursday, he said to me, you need to go to the hospital.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Subscribe to this podcast on your podcast app and never miss an episode.
Welcome back to On the Sporting Couch, a psychological profile of one of our leading sportsmen or women. In the studio this week, Stylian Petrov, the former Celtic and Aston Villa player. In 2012, he had the toughest fight of his life when he was diagnosed with acute leukemia. What was your reaction when they broke the news to you?
First of all, I need to call my wife. I didn't cry. I wanted to cry, but I wanted to stay strong on the phone for my wife.
What did you say to her?
She was on her way down to London. I called and I say, listen, I'm in the hospital. I'm having a few more tests. I think you need to turn back and come back. Because obviously when I walked in, they told me, now, the way we talked about it, the doctor sat across me and he said, we think you've got leukemia. Now, it's not preparation, it's not anything that you know will calm you down. We're 99% certain you've got leukemia.
And only a 25% chance of surviving.
Of surviving.
You said to me you cried for 20 seconds.
20 seconds. That's what, after my, I've called my wife. I've told her she needs to turn back, put the phone down, and I burst crying. It took me 20 seconds. I remember it was very quick. I realized how serious. I said to myself, if I start crying, my wife is very emotional. I've got two very good kids, younger kids. I need to be strong, like I've always been.
But Stellene, if somebody told me, broke that news to me, I'd have cried for more than 20 seconds.
I've cried after, but at that moment, I couldn't cry. I've cried for 20 seconds and I need to be strong. Then my wife walked in, and when I've told her, I broke the news to her, as I said, I've got leukemia. She just burst crying, and I was closer to go again. I've cuddled her, and I said, listen, I'll tell you one thing. It's going to be a long journey. I didn't tell her that told me there's going to be 3 years treatment. I said, it's going to be a long journey, but we'll go through it like we went through everything else. And you know what? She felt calmer. She said, but do you really, you know what is leukemia? And I say, yeah, I know. We both know. But we'll be fine. We'll be fine because I should have not said. I say, yeah, but they say it's 25% chance to survive. And she just went. She just went and say, what do you mean 25%? This 25% is not enough. So now I needed to, from actually breaking a bad news to her, I need to turn it to a good news. And I say, well, if I tell you that I've got 25% to survive, Paulina, then 0%, what would you take? She cleared her eyes and she went, you know what? I see where you're going. Say, stick with me. Let's see what they're going to say. And we'll take it in the next couple of days.
This is going to be a weird question, but I'm going to ask it anyway.
I've heard a lot of weird questions. I don't think that'll be a weird question.
In that 20 seconds crying or subsequent crying, if those tears could have said something, what would the tears have said?
Why me? That was the question that still in my head. It's in my head every day. It's question for everyone. It's the tears. It's everything around being diagnosed with cancer. We have that question, why me? And this tear was... Every single tear is coming out as why me, why me, why me, why me. And the next one is coming is what's wrong, what I've done wrong. Where did that come from? You know, all these tears was all the questions. They actually, I didn't have answers.
Have you got an answer today?
Nope. Not an answer. You know, what's a shame? It's the amount of money that has been thrown for researches, for drugs. We still can't find a cure that kills millions. That's really the saddest thing, because it must be, and we still can't find where it's coming from. Nobody knows. And you know, the hardest moment for me was, I could never say, yes, you'll be fine.
Can you say that to yourself today?
No, because, you know, every time I go for a blood test, you know, the doctors will remind me what I've been through, what's happening. They always say, you know, they're saying that you've got 5 risky years and they come back and, you know, it's always going to be behind me. It's always going to look after me. And people said to me, how you deal with it? I say, I don't think about it.
Do you feel you're living under a death sentence?
Yes, I think we are. It's brought to me quicker than somebody else, you know. It's more risk than anybody else. But like I say, it's more risk. People say, oh, what's happened if you come back? And I always give them the answer, well, we didn't expect in the first place. So I don't really know how to answer this question.
I'm going to ask another tough question. Has the fact that you've lived under this death sentence altered the way that you've lived your life?
Of course.
Explain.
Of course. I've changed completely different stress level. I've tried to keep it as minimal as I can. I try to enjoy every single moment in my life. I think sometimes we become naive in life, you know. We don't appreciate little things. I want to appreciate my boys. You know, my boys seeing me in a state that kids should never see their parents.
And your son needed therapy, didn't he?
Yeah, of course. He still goes to it. You know, we found that he kept very deep. He had issues. Now he's more open to it. He's 15 now. He talks about it very openly. He told us how hard was him. It was very difficult for them. Now, to break this mental worry is very difficult. You need to work day in and day out. And it's not a quick process that you talk about, okay, you have a therapy for a year. It may be a therapy for all his life.
I'm a bit confused, and I'll tell you why I'm confused. You're currently doing a master's degree on behalf of UEFA to go back into football in an administrative role. If football has made you ill, why on earth would you want to go back into it?
You work with people. You work with the people that you actually appoint. You structure a club and you actually have got more time. You're behind the scenes. You can sometimes do a mistake without being under pressure. But being in the front line as a manager is completely different. Everything goes down to you. If you win on a Saturday, if you put across yourself in front of the media, do you do the right things? All the eyes are on you. Will I be walking into today's job? I don't know. Will I have the options? Yes, I will.
Talk to us about the treatment that you've had to undergo to get to the place where you've been in remission. And I'd also ask you about the role your wife has played in supporting you.
Treatment. The treatment is very interesting because my professor, Professor Lynch, he decided to give me, I always called him, I told him, I'm your guinea pig. Because I was so fit, I was so happy to get the chemo so I can kill the cancer. I knew how important it was. I never complained. I never argued about if I want to take a chemotherapy. Because when you take chemotherapy, you, like we talked about, you know, death sentence, you're actually signing off drugs that you're going to receive that actually you've got, you can go in coma, you can never wake up, you can lose your hearing, you can lose your vision. Are you signing off for this? You're signing off for this. You're looking at, I remember my wife sitting beside me and she'll poke me to see if I'm awake, if I can hear her. One of the drugs, I had a slow speech for 4 weeks. I could hardly speak because of the slow speech. That's the side effect. But you just can't say no to it. You know, talking about mental strength, about positivity, about being able to take the actually bad thoughts away from your mind, the hospital went crazy with me because I've asked for a treadmill. I've asked for a Bosu ball that I can do my exercise. I've asked for a yoga teacher. By doing that, a lot of other patients joined me, going on a bike, going on a treadmill, being able to get, you know, things that you do and getting away from all the treatment for all the things that you actually don't want to think about. So for me, it was very important. And the professor loved that. I've lost a lot of friends. I lost a lot of friends.
Why? Because
I've become friends with people that had treatment. I had conversation with people in a deathbed. You know, they've died in a week later, and they've told me that, you know, I'm sitting there. They've been under high dose drugs because they've been told that nothing can be done for them. Now we're having a great conversation here, having here smiling. But when you sit across someone, when you've become close friend, and he's mid-20 and he's telling you that you only got a week to live and thanks for your friendship and, you know, I always look after you, you know, I'll look from up top. What would you say? What would you say? You have his mum and dad beside that bed. And he wanted to see me to say goodbye. Now he's sitting there, you know, we're talking about, you know, mental strength and talking about people, you know, we're able to speak and encourage people. How you can encourage somebody like that?
When they've got a week to live and they say, Stillian, I want to say goodbye to you.
You know, I've took a different approach. For first of all, for about 5 minutes, I didn't say a word. I brought him a Costa coffee. I didn't know what to say. And obviously, I just went to a different approach. I just start talking about completely different. And I went to him, you know what? Let's forget about it. And just let's talk about something that you want to talk about. What do you want to say? And the next thing you want, I want pizza. I want pizza because I won't be able to have pizza anymore. That was his reaction. So all of a sudden we looked at each other and I need to go and get pizza.
I'm going to ask a really hard question against it, and I apologise for doing so. Have you thought about that outcome, that possibility?
Of course. Of course. I'll like to say no, but yeah, I've did. I'll tell you what, I've probably started practicing a couple of speeches as well. But, you know, touch wood, I'm still here. Kids are happy for me being around. The wife is very happy being around. You know, you asked me a question about my wife. Amazing woman.
What's amazing about her?
Everything. I always say she gave up everything for these 3 years for me to survive. She realized that she needs to be around me. She done researches about diet, about, you know, drinking beetroot to clear my blood, you know, vegetable. Does she stay away from this? What I need to do, how I need to, you know, I need to drink a lot of water so I make sure I go to the toilet and clear the chemo quicker I can so my counts can go back quicker. She slept in for 2 years in a little bed in the room. Not many people does that. She didn't want to leave. She ate everything that I ate. So she wanted to be part of me and show me that she's with me. And, you know, sometime in life we try to find the perfect half. And I found the perfect half.
Welcome back to On the Sporting Couch, a psychological profile of one of our leading sportsmen or women. In the studio this week, Stillian Petrov, the former Celtic and Aston Villa player. Stillian, I know this is a tough question, but in your opinion, did football make you sick?
Well, my wife blame it. I'll say it that way. But
what do you think?
I think so. I think so. You know, when I obviously dealing now with a lot of with people that are doing the research, with the professor, with that, it's about the immune system, isn't it? It's the stress. My immune system was low, so that's what it's about your cells. And when you're under stress, then your immune system is low. That's where we get ill. That's where you get bacteria. That's where you get virus. That's what they say. You need to keep your immune system high. And I was under a lot of stress.
In psychotherapy, we're sometimes very interested about the nature of the illness. Very often people who have stomach pains will be sick to the stomach of something. I'm just wondering what it means for you, who has football in your blood, that your blood turns sick. Do you understand what I'm asking?
Yes, I understand what you're asking, and I'll give you the straight answer. You know, we're talking about how the illness come. You know, I've never had cold. I've never been ill.
That's extraordinary. I mean,
extraordinary, and my illness is in the blood. It's cancer in the blood. It's acute lymphoblastic leukemia. Usually, young kids has it.
I hear what you're saying, but I'm just going to go back to the start of it, really. My interest is in the stress that professional sport places on people like yourself, and your body, like everyone's body, has a way of saying, I've had enough. This is just too much.
That's where you go on overload, isn't it? That's what we're saying. That's where you push that extra mile, immune system low. You're under pressure. You keep everything in. You don't like to be exposed. You know what? What is the worst thing for us human is what other people think. That's the worst thing, because then the pressure comes from there.
Could you have turned round to your football manager at the time and said, I'm under so much stress, I just need a couple of weeks off?
Yes, but I didn't.
Why?
Because probably as me, I didn't think at that time, I didn't think that that's the right thing. The manager had enough to deal with. I thought that was my responsibility to deal in my head. And more probably was wrong. Probably if I spoke to him, he would say to me, you know what, Stylian, take a week off. What is your problem? Maybe if I was more open and speak with people and let them know that the issue, I could have tried to sort in my head. Sometimes, you know, you don't sort the problem, it become a bigger problem. When you get judged, you try to be the right, we need to do the right thing. I don't like to do that. And it become bigger pressure and bigger pressure and bigger pressure. Makes a big difference.
I'd like to take you back a couple of years. You're now in remission. 2016, you ask Aston Villa whether you can try and play again, and you start a pre-season, and it's looking like you might play professional football again. And then?
It hurt me a lot. I have always said it and I always will say it. It hurt me.
What hurt you, Stevie?
It hurt me that the football was taken away from me. You know, it was taken away from me because, not by my will, you know, it was taken away because I was struck with the illness. And, you know, we're talking about these days, we don't see players with honesty, with desire, with love in the club. The club has given me a lot. The football world, the support that I had, the world itself have given me a great support. And I think Aston Villa missed the bigger picture. The bigger picture for me is, first of all, playing even. If they were giving me a chance to play even a minute, they still didn't see the bigger picture.
What is the bigger picture?
Showing everybody who fight this disease or any disease, there's always a way back. You can always fight a way back, and it's life after all the bad moments that you experience. I could have shown a lot of people. I can give a lot of people strength that, you know, going back and play, because it was against the odds. When I've told my professor that I'm going to go, bear in mind, then I was playing an 84, 85 kilos. End of my treatment, I was 139 kilos. Now imagine the effort that I've put in a year and a half, I said, before I broke the news that actually I'm going to go back in a pre-season. I need to go back to about 92, 93 kilos before actually thinking going back. So for that 1.5 years, I've put everything. And again, you've got to say you're naive because you've put your, first of all, your body under a lot of stress. Your mind and a lot of stress. But I was doing it because there's a bigger picture out there. It wasn't just about me anymore. It's about football. It's about showing people that fight this disease, that they can go through it, and it's a life afterwards. And, you know, I was nearly there. I didn't ask for money. Didn't ask for a contract. I just had for chance. They've made that decision very lightly, way too quickly, without really explaining it to me. And, you know, at that time, when you say, you know, you don't get tired, at that time, I was tired from naivety from the club and the people that made the decision because they didn't see the bigger picture. Even if I didn't play all season and come out and play, it was going to be a great moment for everybody who fight this disease. But they didn't realize that. They probably still don't see it, which is a shame, to be honest. But, you know, I don't hold any hard thoughts or hard regrets. You know, they needed to make a decision. They've made it. I'm disappointed, still disappointed, and it always will be. I've passed it now, you know. I'm moved on, and, you know, I'll always support this club. But, you know, it was a bigger picture there. And they didn't see it.
But maybe your calling, Stylian, is the work you're doing now in your foundation to raise awareness and to raise money for the treatment of this disease.
Yes, it's something me and my wife started 4 years ago. We decided to do that because as a family, not just as a father and mother and two kids, as a family, we went through a lot. We know how difficult it is. We try to raise the awareness. We try to raise funds for the research. We try to raise funds for families by helping in a different ways. By saying that, we help a lot of families mentally as well. It's not just financial support, mental support as well. You'll be surprised how many people get in touch with us about how they can live their life again. What is the way forward? Because they don't know. They're lost. Mentally, they're lost. People find it difficult. You know, some people hide that they had cancer. They don't want to tell their bosses they had cancer because they think that it's really embarrassing and they won't be hired again, which is really sad to see. That thing is like a plug. You know, the thing that is something that should not be shared.
Here's your free plug time. If people listening are struggling with this form of cancer or any other form of cancer, how do they get in touch with you?
All the social media, Steele and Petrov Foundation. You can get in touch with us by every social media. We've got Twitter, we've got Instagram, Facebook, we've got a website, and you are always welcome. We are there to help. We are there to help with everything we can.
Just finally, Stillian, it's an extraordinary story and it's brought me close to tears talking to you. If people are going through a similar journey, what's your message to them?
Message is very simple. Not many words. Believe, fight, and always know that when you go through battle like that, you're going to encourage other one to survive and you're going to let other people live their life as well. It's either a newborn kid or an older person. Because by us beating it, give a chance to everybody else to beat it as well.
Stillian Petrov, many thanks for joining me on the Sporting Couch.
It was a pleasure.
You've been listening to On the Sporting Couch, a programme that's trying to give a flavour of what goes on between therapist and client in clinic. I hope the show will encourage anyone going through a tough time to seek help. And there are some useful links on the TalkSport website. Have a look at talksport.com/sporting-couch. I'm Gary Bloom, and my guest in the studio has been former Aston Villa and Celtic player Stillian Petrov. That's all for now, and please remember, there's no such thing as good health without good mental health. Goodbye.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.